Welcome to the Sexual Mindfulness Project podcast, where we talk about creating an intentional relationship and how to find joy in slowing down, letting go of judgment, and connecting more deeply with your partner. I'm Dr. Shalom Levitt, and today I'm here with Amber Price and Rebecca Clark. Okay, well, welcome to our first podcast. We are really excited to be with you today. I'm going to introduce myself and then have Rebecca and Amber introduce themselves. I'm Shalom Levitt. I'm an assistant professor at BYU in the School of Family Life, and I research healthy sexuality. Specifically, I look at how mindfulness might improve people's experience in sex and how slowing down and being more present may actually enhance the sexual experience. So I will go ahead and have Rebecca maybe take a minute and Amber right after her.
I'm Rebecca Clark and I'm a PhD student in marriage, family, and human development at BYU. I am working with Shalom and I research sexuality and the overlap between sexuality, healthy sexuality, and religion. That's kind of my passion. I have a master's degree in marriage and family therapy, and kind of adding to that and studying sex and religion.
Okay, I am Amber Price. I am a graduate student working with Shalom, currently also in the marriage, family, and human development program, working on my master's degree, also working to study healthy sexuality with Shalom. And I'm particularly interested in the female sexuality aspect of it and women exploring and addressing their own sexual needs and desires and kind of stepping into that full piece of who they are, acknowledging their sexuality as a core part of who they are.
Perfect. Well, you know, I have to say two things before we really dive into the topic of today. First, as I was just thinking about these two amazing women that I work with, I thought we cannot let this opportunity go by. That three women who are really involved in this topic in slightly different ways, that we really should harness that and be able to have these open discussions that maybe will help answer some questions for other people as well. The second thing I'd like to address is that we all come from a background of religiosity. And although each of us is quite religious and certainly have that bias or that perspective, part of what we research is trying to understand other people's perspective and how different perspectives, whether it's different religions or different social roles or different ways of looking at sexuality, can still be within this healthy realm of the sexual experience. And so we want to be upfront about our bias, but we also want to welcome and discuss the perspectives of other people. All right, so with that in mind, let's just dive in. We wrote a blog on how to understand healthy sexuality. We really have to understand the importance of the brain, that the brain is really one of the most important sexual organs that contributes to how we experience sex. And so if you've read our blog, you'll kind of have a foundation on where we're coming from. And then we just had a few questions from people that we generated between the three of us that we wanted to address just in this discussion. So do either one of you want to start off with one of the questions you're particularly just itching to answer?
I love this question about, it seems unfair that women seem to have more struggles in sex than men do. And why is that?
Why is that?
I don't know that I have the answer to that. I wish I did. But in considering that question, some thoughts came to mind that I think could potentially be helpful. Just research that I've read and research, Shalom, that you have worked on came to my mind too. And I was thinking, you know, isn't it interesting that we look at sexuality through a sort of a lens where women have the problems in sex and men are sort of the kind of the normal, the set point that we measure women against. And I thought, you know, how interesting if we were to kind of flip that perspective. And I think some of the things that we struggle with, that women struggle with, are things like a slower arousal time, or maybe a lot of women, fully 30, over 30% of women will present in therapy with lack of sexual desire. And, you know, I think, what if we were to look at those through a different perspective and through a different lens, and Shalom, you have in your research, and say, you know what, are these really actually problems? Are these just differences? And we've labeled them problematic because we've labeled male sexuality. We have a perspective of male-centric sex. And so anyway, I was thinking about even just the difference in the sexual hormones that women and men come to the sexual experience with. You know, women primarily present with their major driving sexual hormone is oxytocin. They want to bond. And oxytocin doesn't kick in the sexual experience for a little while, for longer than it takes for men's primary sexual hormone or testosterone to kick in. And so I'm thinking, how interesting that we've labeled that sort of slower response in terms of a female response, we've labeled that problematic.
Yeah, that I think that's really interesting too. It's, I think, kind of originates from the reality that all of sex research, really our perspective on sex, has come from men. And so when we started researching sexual issues early on, it just seemed natural to men that these would be the primary things we would look at: frequency, desire. And so we've kind of set those as the markers for a healthy sexual experience. Whereas had women maybe been the ones initially researching that, we might have been talking more about relationship quality and emotional connectedness. And so it is interesting that women have kind of, it seems, gotten compared to these standards that certainly are more prevalent for men, and we've kind of ignored or glossed over the issues that might be more important to women.
Yeah, and I have a couple thoughts on that. First of all, I really like what David Schnarch says about the low desire, high desire partner thing. And of course, that can be flipped either way. Women can be the high desire and men can be the low desire. But I like that he says that it's part of the purpose of sex is that we have to work together. When there's one high desire and when there's one low desire, it forces you to come together and find a happy medium. And it's not low desire partner has to perform for the high desire partner or things like that. It's this chance to kind of create a balance. And I really like the idea of that because that's what sex is intended for, is to bring us together. And then I also kind of like the idea that I think for women, it's natural for us to always be the givers. We give and we give and we give as a mother, as a wife, as a friend. You know, it's natural for us to feel like we're giving of ourselves often. And in sex, in order for it to be fully fulfilling, a woman has to learn to receive. And I think there's probably intention in that also. This is something that a woman needs to address in herself, to learn to figure out what her own needs and desires are, to figure out what her wants are, and to allow somebody else to serve her occasionally also.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I kind of like to look at it like, you know, women are, our bodies are fairly complicated, mostly because we are designed that we can also carry a child, right? We can go through pregnancy. And so all of our sexual organs are internal and rather complex. And so men's arousal, you know, there's lots of research on this that shows men's arousal pretty straightforward, right? If they're stimulated, over 90% of the time, they're going to reach orgasm. Not true for women. Additionally, women sometimes don't even feel desire until after they've already experienced some arousal. So it's kind of helpful for me to think of women as this pretty complex, highly powerful, you know, machine, if you want to say that. And so it takes a really skilled operator to understand the complications here. Not only the woman, but then the woman teaching her husband how to help, you know, her with arousal and then achieving orgasm and really fully enjoying that sexual experience. Being honest with herself, like Amber's saying, maybe overcoming some of these socialized roles that we've taken on as caregivers in every setting, And maybe letting go of that just a little and saying, here's an experience that I share with my spouse where I can just fully let go and enjoy our togetherness, you know, and what it does to my body, what it does to his body. We kind of relax and allow that to occur.
Yeah. And isn't there just beauty in that as they learn to work together to figure out her needs and his needs in tandem and to make it work for both of them, ideally.
And it takes a long time, doesn't it?
Yeah.
There's a funny story. I almost always tell it, you know, some point like this where one of my daughters was getting married and, you know, I'd always been really open about sex. And she, of course, had waited until marriage to have sex. And so we were having one last discussion on it. And she said, well, so is there anything else I need to know? And I said, no, I think we've talked about everything. How are you feeling? And she said, well, this really doesn't seem that complicated. I think I'll have this down in a couple months. And, you know, so for those of us who have been trying to get this down, you know, it takes decades, right, to really understand ourselves, to understand, you know, our partner. It's something that we're actually really lucky that it's so complicated because it keeps it interesting.
You know, I think that leads so nicely into another question that is sort of asked a lot, sort of in keeping with this perspective of sometimes we fall into this trap of male-centric sex. Women have asked this, you know, I've always been told just to keep my husband happy, and how can I go about changing this mentality and enjoying sex myself? And I think part of that is understanding that in a great relationship, I don't think that men are wanting to really be the only beneficiaries of the sexual experience. I think most men are really wanting to have their wife and their partner be fully present and fully there. Talk about the flip side as well, because this can be taken too far, where we start to put pressure on women to enjoy themselves and orgasm and things like that. We get focused too far that way. But I'm curious to hear from you guys about how do you think that can work? How can women enjoy themselves even more?
Well, I really like what you say that you know, this isn't an either or. It's not men enjoying themselves or women enjoying. Really, we're working together. And the more each of us is enjoying the experience, we know from lots of research that partners really play off each other. If the husband's enjoying it, the wife gets, you know, more out of it, and vice versa. I think it's important for women to start taking responsibility for what they're experiencing in sex, and not thinking that their husband gives them a sexual experience. They're a contributor in this experience. And so if something's going wrong, they need to have the courage to stand up, you know, to voice their concern and say, hang on, we're moving a little too fast, or I'm not feeling quite to that point of arousal yet. Could we slow down and just extend this or talk about something? Women, I think, have bought into this socialized idea that they just need to please their husband. And that causes problems all the way around.
And I think on the flip side, it's maybe important to also acknowledge that men kind of get socialized into these sexual animals or something. Mm-hmm. And they're not, you know, there's research that shows that men feel emotions a lot like women do. And yet we don't give them credit for that. We kind of teach men to shut down their emotions, shut down those feelings of vulnerability and things. And I think that men also want that emotional connection, and that comes through their sexuality also. They just need to be allowed to share that also.
Yeah, that's excellent. And you know, if women are having a struggle with these sorts of ideas, or like Amber says, if men are struggling, having a hard time tapping into their emotions, one really good therapeutic way to start addressing that is to keep a journal. You know, write down, why do I assume that my husband has to initiate sex? Why can't I initiate sex? And then kind of just, you know, let yourself talk through what sorts of messages you bought into that have led you to this belief, and then start challenging those and saying, you know what, it's going to make me feel awkward, but I'm going to initiate sex this week. And I'm going to show my husband that, you know, I can take charge of our experience as well. And he may really love that. In fact, we know that men do love it when their wives initiate sex. But that's just one example, right? There's all sorts of messages we may have bought into that we need to challenge.
Yeah. You know, Shalom, I love that idea of like journaling or just because of the self-reflection and that responsibility piece that brings to it. We know that research says that women who fail to communicate their sexual preferences have a harder time with orgasm and with enjoying sex. And I think, you know, it might be because they themselves aren't entirely certain of what really turns them on and what really means pleasurable sex for them because of this kind of outward focus and other focus. And I think for both men and women, that can be a really helpful kind of antidote to getting in this kind of lopsided sexual relationship where one person is always giving and the other is always receiving, which doesn't work for either partner, as you have both said. But just communicating with each other, I think just having a sounding board, I think that could be a really therapeutic and valuable conversation to have with a spouse to say, what do you notice that I like? You know, that could be a really intriguing kind of meta reflection on sexual preferences and I think can really enhance sexuality.
And I think, Shalom, from your research, I think the idea of the sexual mindfulness is so powerful in this, in just slowing down and not necessarily being goal-oriented, with the goal usually being orgasm, especially male orgasm, but just to let it be spending time together, touching without that end goal, or even just talking, just spending intimate time together, I think can be powerful in moving some of these things forward without feeling the pressure of something more.
Yeah, I like that. And I think it ties in so well to kind of what we wanted this podcast to be about, was really the importance of how we think about sex is so critical. Whether we have to overcome some of these messages that we received maybe in our childhood families, or something that we picked up along the way in other relationships, or maybe there are some problematic messages in our current relationship. How do we think about them and then challenge them and then go about deconstructing them so that we can have a really fulfilling, meaningful sexual experience? Even like what you said, Amber, just now, maybe it's just slowing down and having a conversation about our arousal. First of all, conversations about sex are quite stimulating to couples, right? And so we think, oh, we're gonna talk about something. Well, actually, that's a really good way to create some arousal within each individual. But it's also a really good way to increase that intimacy. Like, we really understand each other better now when we touch, or maybe we rush through certain elements of sex, or maybe we're just not having sex enough because our lives are chaotic and busy. Whatever it is, as we just turn a spotlight on it and talk about it, suddenly it starts falling apart already. You know, we start finding the solution to whatever that issue is just from bringing it up and talking about it.
I think that, Shalom, speaks so much to blog post about the brain is a powerful sex organ. It is probably the most powerful sex organ that we have. And just recognizing that is so important.
And if your brain has been your brain for decades, it may need some undoing. You know, you may need to challenge some things that have been taught or socialized.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Pull out some weeds.
And maybe don't expect that it's going to be quick. It may take time and effort.
Yeah, good point.
But I think working with your partner on that can be really wonderful on that journey. I think most couples are on the same team. They both want to have each partner enjoy the sexual experience. And so I think making that, like you're saying, making that part of the sexual relationship, part of the, you know, the emotional part of the sexual relationship, and that connective power, tapping into that maybe outside of a physical sexual experience, can be a really powerful kind of help to a sexual relationship.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, Rebecca. And we really need to remember that it can actually be really fun.
Yep.
I mean, talking about our problems in this respect, like, you know, I would like more frequency, or I would like, you know, us to try this. That can actually be a really fun conversation if we can just be relaxed about it and say, you know, let's be on the same team, the same side to solving this problem.
Okay. So what does it look like to be mindful in general?
Okay. This is a really good question. Mindfulness is kind of this popular, a little trendy right now to practice some mindfulness. And I think when we're talking about mindfulness in our day-to-day lives, we're really talking about slowing down our thoughts. And how we do that and why we do it is really important. Most people will suggest that you slow it down through your breath, right? You pay attention to your breath. You know, what does it feel like as you breathe in and expand? What does it feel like when you exhale and just let go of all of that? And as you repeat that process over and over, people start to become aware of their body, right? We're more aware of the pressure on our, as we sit, or the movement of our legs as we walk. We become aware of the sunshine as it shines down on our face. We just start to notice details that we had never noticed before. And at the same time, we start recognizing what's important and what's just noise, right? And we let go of the noise and we're better able to focus on the really critical, important, meaningful things in our life. So that's kind of how I would describe mindfulness just in my general life. Now, it takes practice, and we know from research that in as little as just 10 minutes a day of directing your thoughts in the way I just described, focusing on your breathing, in just as little as 10 minutes a day, people start to notice a change in how they process their daily living.
One part that I really like about the mindfulness is the emotional regulation that can come with it too. When you notice that you're feeling something, you simply notice it. You don't judge it. You just say, huh, I'm feeling a little bit anxious right now. And that might happen in a sexual setting. I'm feeling anxious. Interesting. Not I'm bad, or, you know, being frustrated with yourself. And I feel like that could really play into, like I said, like the sexual setting, when you stop judging those feelings that you're having, but just notice them and let them happen and learn to kind of just let them go.
Yeah. And in fact, you might even say, huh, I'm feeling a little anxious right now. Why might that be? You know, so you're a little curious too about what are the circumstances that might be creating some anxiety for me? And then I think it helps us, again, to see those details and kind of understand ourselves better, see the meaning, the important parts, and let go, just like you're saying, Amber, let go of these judgments and the negative element.
You know, one thing I think that I really appreciate about the mindfulness approach is how individual it is. You don't have to have partner buy-in to practice it. You can practice it almost wherever you are, where at any kind of time of day, and that it is something that you can practice and get better at. I think that's really impressive. But in terms of working on your sexuality, Shalom, I'd love to hear you talk about the power of mindfulness in kind of a sexual setting.
Okay, yeah. You know, Amber just brought this up, that likely most of us feel heightened anxiety in sex. It may be because we're a little uncomfortable with our naked body, or we're uncomfortable with sex, period. You know, we maybe grew up in an environment where sex was a little shameful or awkward at best. And so even in this loving, trusting relationship that we hopefully have in our romantic relationships, we still feel a little awkward or anxious. And we start judging ourselves or judging our partner. And what we notice with people who practice mindfulness in their everyday life and then try to apply it to mindfulness during sex, again, they're able to slow down and recognize that what's important is staying connected and present in their body. And just kind of like Amber gave this example, just noticing that something might cause some anxiety, or maybe something went wrong in sex, you know, you thought you were going to perform this way and it turned out a different way. And maybe just being like, huh, I wonder why that happened. Maybe even infusing a little humor in it, you know, and it's like, well, that was kind of funny. But then not being judgmental, letting go of, since I've had two babies, I have a little role and I'm so embarrassed that he sees that. We know from research, men are far less judgmental, particularly in sex, than women are. And so I think a lot of women need to let go of that tendency to judge themselves, to judge the situation, and just be present so that they can be aware of what's going on, connect with their body, and actually enjoy the arousal, the connection, the emotional intimacy that is right there present for them to experience. I know you guys have thoughts. So,
well, you know, it's interesting because the harder we try to grasp something or control something, usually the more brittle things become and things start to kind of shatter in a way. And as you're talking, I was thinking, there's something so beautiful about kind of that letting go idea. And I think sexuality is a place, having sex is a time when you can be so supremely vulnerable and let go of your judgments, let go of the grocery list on the fridge, let go of whatever, you know, the daily kind of little things that sometimes start to kind of come into our mind, just let it kind of walk across your mind and walk right out and be just focusing on giving yourself permission to just be in that moment and enjoy that moment of connection with your partner. It's really powerful.
Yeah. And I think just going back to, we've already kind of hit on this, but just the challenging the expectations that we have and things when you're being sexually mindful, you can kind of let those expectations go, be less goal-oriented and just notice what's happening right in that moment. Like, how does that feel? How am I feeling right now? And not be thinking about what comes next.
Yeah. You know, I've taught seminars on sexual mindfulness, and two of the things that I think surprise couples, even couples who have been married for decades, two of the results of slowing down and being more present with their spouse is that they start experiencing this quality in the relationship of acceptance. Like, you know, yeah, I know we have problems. We disagree on a number of things. Our lives are busy or chaotic, but we just accept each other, particularly in this experience of sex. It's like, I'm receiving your body, you're receiving my body, and not only our bodies, but our emotions and just everything that we are. It's just like, for this moment, we're just with each other and everything else can melt away. And then the other quality of their relationship that people will comment on is that they just feel so much more compassion for themselves, all that they've been through, all that they brought to this relationship, but then also for their partner, that they start seeing them anew. I married this guy or this girl, and we've become so routine with each other that things run smoothly in our routine, but we start to think that we know everything about them. And yet mindfulness, particularly in sex, helps us see each other anew. Like, I didn't notice, you know, this little element of how we interact with each other. Or I just see him as I saw him 20 years ago when we first met and everything was exciting. And now I know him very well, or I know her very well, but I'm seeing them anew. I see a deeper part of them that was hidden from me, that kind of escaped my attention. Okay, so we're going to wrap it up for this time. We will continue to have these conversations, and we invite you to also get on our website and under the questions tab, go ahead and ask a question that you might be interested in hearing us discuss or write a blog about. Thank you.